Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear.
So I usually start these off with an introduction, but I think maybe, can you introduce yourself?
Yes.
Who are you?
My name is Gwyneth Paltrow.
Okay, and where are we?
We're in Goop headquarters in Santa Monica, California.
So there's lots of cool, hip-looking people, and Gwyneth's office is pretty hip and cool. How long have you guys been here?
We've been here. So the building that we're in, we have been in nearly 2 years, and then we have a building right across the alley that we probably got about 6 months later, and then a third piece, and now we have a new building that we just moved into a couple weeks ago.
So next time I come here, you will own Santa Monica. It will just be called Goopa Monica or something like that. So we've got lots of stuff to talk about. Okay. It's going to be a blast. Is that salt on your...
It is.
You have salt on your table?
It's Maldon sea salt.
Nice.
I'm a salt person.
Okay.
So these are two other kinds of salts that I got, sort of flavored salts.
But Gwyneth has a salt collection on her desk.
I do.
Next to her laptop. So you've been CEO of Goop for a year now, is that right?
That's correct.
How are you liking it?
A year and a bit. I love it. It's extraordinarily challenging and exhilarating and exciting, but it's certainly, I feel, the most professionally fulfilled that I've ever felt in my life.
So, but you, when you started out, you did not want to, your dream as a little girl was not to run Goop, right? It was to be on stage.
Yeah.
And how do you think you ended up here? It was this kind of... an accidental road that you went down, you're like, oh, I kind of like it here.
Yeah. I mean, my dreams as a child was to do what my mother did, right? I used to watch her rehearse plays in Williamstown, Massachusetts all summer long, and I would sit on the floor and watch her, you know, be this incredibly inspired, powerful figure. And I really wanted to do that. And, luckily, I was able to, and I had this incredible film career. And I think it was sort of the convergence of a bunch of things that led me down. You know, I really obviously took quite a pivot. I think that...
using the tech words, pivot.
Oh, geez.
Nice.
Well, I'm talking about an acting career. I'm mixing my metaphors.
It's all right. They'll understand. This audience gets it.
But I think that, you know, there's a part of filmmaking as an actor that's inherently very lonely. And I was out alone, kind of on the road for all my 20s, like 3 to 5 films a year in strange cities, having these amazing adventures, but also it's quite solitary, you know, having room service and walking streets by yourself. And
this, of course, is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, this is very communal. I love the sort of quotidian repetition. I love like dropping my kids off, coming to work, building something. It's very, very different from acting in that, you know, when you're acting, you are one cog in a machine and there's really, you're not part of a vision or a strategy or a creative direction. You know, you have an important part of the, you know, of the puzzle, but... it's just it's incredibly different.
Are there skills that you got that in acting that you brought to this that you never thought you would, beyond the traditional of like, you know, not being uncomfortable in a room?
I mean, I think that as an actress, there is this sort of unspoken role that we have on set. Like if you're the female star of a film, you sort of are responsible for maintaining like an energetic balance on set and looking after energetically, sort of looking after the men and making sure everybody feels supported and you're sort of fostering communication and good feeling. And I think that, at least for me, that was, you know, very much what I felt part of my role was on a film set. And I definitely brought that here.
So you, so Goop is, what would, how would you, how do you describe it? Because I, the problem is it's like, there's so many things that you're doing. And like, I literally am waiting for there to be the press release that says you've opened the Goop theme park and the, you know, Goop car, driverless car, and
that might be a bit far.
But what, like, what is for you? It's what is it?
So if you think of a model like a Ralph Lauren or like a mini Disney, even so, and you, if you think about all of the different verticals that they're in, especially Disney, I always look to that corporation as, you know, they're in all of these different verticals. They do travel, they do F&B, they do content, they do CPG, they do everything. And the brand execution is perfect. So that sort of always serves as like my back burner inspiration for what I'm trying to do for my demographic. And so, you know, if you boil it down, we make content and we sell product. We make and sell product.
So what do you, what's your day like? What's your day like? Is it, you know, you said do you wake up at like 6 o'clock with the kids and then mm-hmm. do you immediately like give us a walk us through a day in the life of Gwyneth Paltrow today and okay. not acting?
I wake up at 6:20 every morning.
6:20. Okay.
And then, I just have like a minute with coffee before kids get up.
Do you look at your devices straight away?
Or? I do. I just make sure there's no, like, there wasn't some meltdown overnight. And then I really like my New York Times briefing that comes every morning. So I kind of sit with my coffee for a minute at the kitchen table. And then I have a minute. I see if there's anything like super pressing that I have to respond to. And then I get the kids up. And then I take them to school, and then I go exercise, and then I come here.
And what? And so once you get here, what are you doing? Are you designing products? Are you, you know?
It depends on the day. You know, we have certain weekly meetings that are built into the schedule, and then we have, you know, it's like whatever. I mean, there's a lot. Ultimately, like I always say, the buck really stops with me for everything, but. You know, there's a lot to do. So there's a lot, you know, from like a creative standpoint, there's a lot in terms of designing clothes, thinking about product. And then there's the whole business side of things. And so it's complicated.
So with the business side of things, did you get venture funding for,
yeah.
for so did you experience I don't want to put you on the spot, but
no, go ahead.
I mean, like, look, you know, I've covered these industries for a long time, and we've seen what's happening in Hollywood right now with the fall of so many people related to sexual harassment, and mm-hmm. I've seen it in the venture world where they're incredibly disrespectful to women. Did you experience that, or are you kind of above the fray of it that you didn't have to?
I didn't experience that in the VC world at all, luckily.
Got it. But in business, have you kind of not necessarily the harassment, but the way that certain men mansplain, I guess, if you will, like.
I mean, I think that, you know, I think people are predisposed to think that I'm just the face of a company, that I don't understand how business works, that I don't understand yeah. various aspects of it, that it's I'm just like a, you know, a figurehead. I think that I sometimes have to spend time like dispelling a preconceived notion about who I am. And people are, you know, I've run across like incredibly condescending people.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
But it's okay. It's all part of it. And you know what? It's actually been really interesting to have those moments where I feel exposed or taken down a notch, or that my celebrity like does fuck all, you know. And
does that? I was going to ask you this. So how do you feel about those moments? Like
I'm sorry,
like,
I cursed.
Oh no, you can say fuck anything you want. It's okay. This is a podcast. We're not NPR
right,
here.
Of course.
Feel free to just curse for the next 35 minutes. How do you deal with the negative stuff? You know, I mean, there's like, you know, people that criticize Goop and the science behind it and things like that. Like, do you does it bother you? Do you read it? Like, what do you, how do you, with all of it, not just that, yeah. But.
I mean, I think, you know, anybody who is trying to put anything into the world yeah. gets pushback and criticism. Like, if you're trying to move the needle at all, if you're trying to create interesting discussions, you know, I mean, I can name, as you can, like a million people in the tech industry where they just get, you know, might not be from, you know, I don't know, a People magazine. It might be from TechCrunch, but people get shit all day long, especially yeah. if you're trying to be disruptive in any way. I think that, you know, like my overarching feeling about it is I'm really grateful that I have this job and that I've created this business and I have this extraordinary team and we're actually getting traction and we're building a real business. I don't read very much of what's out there just because it doesn't really serve me. Like if something's really important, it'll bubble up to me and it'll get to me.
So you're not on social media searching Gwyneth Paltrow?
Oh, God, no. No, I would probably commit suicide if I did that. No, it doesn't serve.
It's got no purpose.
No, it doesn't make me. I don't learn anything from mm-hmm. the bulk of it. Like sometimes there's a piece of criticism that's like, oh, this is actually a really good point. But a lot of it is like, I feel like a lot of it is just people throwing up their unresolved shit everywhere onto yep. me, onto you, onto any public person, onto their partner. You know what I mean?
I could not agree with you more on that note. One of the things that I always find really interesting is, I mean, what you just said is that, you know, you're putting something out there in the world, you're up for criticism. Do you remember the first time that you like had a like bad critical movie review and how that felt? Like, was that something you learned from, or?
I mean, I stopped reading stuff about
myself
pretty early.
It's funny, a lot of people tell me that they stop reading pretty early.
When I started out, I, you know, got a publicist and, you know, I would get faxes. This is in the 90s of like your press mentions.
Faxes, wow.
Yeah, like faxes would come through.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, how great, you know, this, whatever. And very quickly, I started to realize like that this wasn't going to serve me and that it was just an exercise in like inflating and deflating my ego. And I was like, how is this going to make me a better person? Like I'm either gonna take a bunch of external praise and feel good about myself that day, or I'm gonna take a bunch of external criticism and feel really bad about myself, and neither of it is real and neither of it matters. And so I stopped, like early in my 20s, I stopped reading my own press.
Well, that's good. There are a few people I've asked that question to, and the responses from the more sane human beings is that the more insane ones slurp it up at every occasion possible. So you have two kids, right?
I do.
Do you let them on social media? Do you let them? Are you?
That's really interesting. I mean, yes is the answer. I have a 13-year-old girl. She communicates with her friends solely on Snapchat.
Solely on Snapchat.
She's never been on Facebook. She's like my focus group of one. It's really fascinating.
Are you on Snapchat?
You know, Snapchat, I try. I find it, I think it's built to exclude me. Like, yes. I'm too old for Snapchat and they want me to know it.
Yeah.
And I can't figure out, like, I cannot figure it out.
I'm right there with you.
So I try,
So your daughter, that's exclusively...
She texts on the Snapchat platform.
And do you worry with your kids on there, or is it something?
You know, I have to say, like, my kids are... My son is not interested in social media, barely.
How old is he?
He's 11.
Got it.
He's allowed on it, but he barely partakes in it. My daughter, that whole generation of girls is... They're on it all day, every day. I think, you know, she's a very grounded, very smart girl, and she's got thick skin. But yeah, of course I worry. I mean, it can be brutal and it can just be like the worst side of humanity. And, but I also do think that that generation, they do have a certain imperviousness in mm-hmm. a way. Like they mm-hmm. get it. They get that people are, in pain and that they're spewing out a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily mean that much. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see.
As she gets older.
I mean, I did this TV show with Gary Vaynerchuk, and I remember him saying, like, when we were having this conversation.
The apps one?
Yeah. We're having this conversation around social media, and someone was saying, you know, this is outrageous. Like, you know, young teenagers should not be allowed on social media. And he was like, you are literally the mother in 1950 whatever watching Elvis Presley and saying, this is going to destroy our children. I'm not letting my my child watch him on TV. Like, you are that outdated.
Well, I think, right? I think he's partially right. Gary, I think, would be quite happy if there were a live stream of him sleeping on the internet.
Isn't there one?
There probably is. there's probably a YouTube channel. We should watch it, and we can eat your salt as we watch. It'll be painful to watch. It's interesting. I always am interested in people who have come into the sphere of technology and how they get to see the realities of what it is. And Steve Jobs didn't let his kids use technology. Bill Gates, same thing. And so many CEOs that I've talked to in Silicon Valley. And so it's interesting always to hear as someone who's knowledgeable, let your parents, your kids, sorry.
Well, I think part of the thing that has to be taken into my specific equation is that, like, I have given birth to people who are public figures inherently. And
do they enjoy that? Do they not enjoy it?
It's just an empirical fact. Like, it's just their reality. They understand it. I don't think they like it or dislike it. It's just sort of, that's...
Is that how you feel about it too, or yourself?
I feel a great deal of responsibility. I feel like it's a difficult situation to be born into.
If you could change it, would you? Like, if I had pulled out some magic wand and I said, all right, I can make it so tomorrow you show up at work and you're one of the people out there in the, or maybe you're running this business and no one knows who you are when you walk down
for
the street.
For me,
yeah.
I think at this point, having been a public person for so long has shaped so much of who I am and where I'm trying to go that I don't know. For my children, I would prefer it if they were completely anonymous. It's also hard too because, like, in a way, the fame part, like, of the Gwyneth Paltrow thing is a really effective lever for the business to pull when they need to, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah. So so one of the things that you do a lot of is this last week you were baby to baby giving a speech. You do a lot of work with nonprofits and things like that. How do you kind of pick the things that you want to pull the lever for and the things that are important to you and so on?
I kind of have a few things that, I mean, I think it all sort of starts from. I think especially in looking at the landscape of our country right now, sort of psychologically, socioeconomically, politically, it's pretty bifurcated. It's pretty scary. I feel like everybody feels miles apart from people who believe differently than them. And it's a scary...
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's scary. And so I feel like...
Sorry to interrupt 1 second. Okay. So don't you think that part of that is not, I think a majority of it is because of media? Do you believe that or no? That we have these vastly different, aggressive viewpoints of media.
I think that's definitely part of it. And I wish there was more neutrality in media. But I also think that if the public school education system was much stronger and we had a focus towards, like, truly educating children to feel empowered and to analyze information and to be independent thinkers, we would not have these incredible divides. Because I think that, you know, there's such a huge, I mean, if you look at the difference in the way people are perceiving everything in different parts of the country, you think how, but we're all human beings. We all, like, surely there's a way that we all can be aligned, at least on certain things. And I just feel like we've completely lost track.
And so are you trying to do things to change that? Are you, I mean, I understand that you have a certain amount of hours in the day and a certain amount of times you can pull the lever. Like, how do you decide of these? Because I mean, it's interesting. So I'm sure everyone listening to this and everyone in this office, myself included, you wake up every day and you see these things that are painful, you know, mass shootings, homelessness, Donald Trump, you know, you can just keep going. And you think like, well, what is it? How can I have an impact? And you're someone that can in many respects. And how do you decide which things you're going to put your weight behind?
I mean, very much education and trying to support organizations that go straight for poverty education. So, you know, what I was on the board of Robin Hood in New York City for a long time. I'm still on the Emeritus board. But sort of local organizations that really figure out how to get to the young children and uplift them and educate them and clothe them and feed them, whether it's Baby to Baby here in LA or the Good Plus Foundation in New York, Robin Hood, there's an organization that we love, a group called Donors Choose, where public school educators can post their needs on a website and you can just go on and you can send a 10th grade class from the inner city of Los Angeles to Japan for a 2-week field trip. Hmm. You can give it, you could, a reading circle carpet.
Can I go to Japan on a field trip?
Yeah, you probably
can.
You can
sponsor me. I'll go. so what, so we, I asked you earlier, but I don't think we, you answered it probably, but, what's next for Goop? Like it's interesting because you were saying it's a lifestyle brand in many respects, and like Disney, it does all these things. But what, you know, you have your recipe books, you have the stores, you have all these different things. Like, what's the next? Yeah.
Well, it's all very much feeding into the same thing, right? I mean, the way that we look at it is we have all of these various tentacles, but it's like there's one head of the octopus. That's a terrible analogy.
That works.
I don't know if that really worked. But I think, you know, we're very focused on content creation. Yeah. And, you know, I think the media part of the business is really what lets us create relevance for ourselves out there in the world. So we're working on different ways to create more content all the time. And then we're, you know, very focused on making great non-toxic product and not digital product.
Yes.
Although non-toxic
digital product would be good too. You should start a non-toxic Snapchat. Sure, Evan Spiegel would love another competitor in his life. Do you sometimes come in here and think, oh, I wish I was on a movie set today? Or is that not, it's like that's a gone another world that you just want nothing to do with anymore?
I don't long for it.
But you're going back as Pepper Potts?
I'm Pepper Potts right now.
Is that just for, did you owe someone a favor? You lost a bet? Like,
you know, I would basically do anything for Robert Downey Jr. is what it comes down to.
Got it.
I think that there's a certain sentiment with Robert and, you know, Marvel as well, that a little bit of Pepper Potts is a good grounding moment in a movie like that. And so, and it's also, you know, it's nice to go back and do a day here and a day there and a few days, you know. It's such a huge contrast to normal life now.
I love my normal life now.
You're listening to Inside the Hive with Nick Bilton.
I think it's time. Yes, it's time for you to upgrade to a new HP PC. Why, do you ask? Your old computers and technologies are costing you more time and money than you can actually imagine. You might be thinking, wait, I have a perfectly good PC. Sure, it's a little slow sometimes, but I can surf the web on it, chat with my family and members, and I can like stuff on Facebook. Why do I need a new one? Well, putting aside the safety and security risks that come with older PCs, as technologies become more efficient and faster, the amount of power used to run new HP PCs has dropped dramatically. Not to mention, there's a million frustrations that come with your old hardware. So upgrading to a new HP PC will actually save you time and money. HP has the most secure PCs and printers in the industry. The folks at HP Design put their computers together specifically to help mitigate the horror stories you read about in the news every day, like data breaches and identity theft, really scary stuff that makes me shudder. And HP also offers a 3-year standard warranty on select PCs. They offer excellent pricing and free shipping on returns, and HP also has a flexible financing option. Right now, my listeners of Inside the Hive will get a 35% discount on select HP business products with Intel Core processors. All you need to do is go to hp.com/hive and enter the code HIVE to get 35% off. You also get a 3-year standard warranty on select PCs and free shipping store-wide. Again, go to hp.com/hive, enter the code HIVE, that's Hive at checkout, and you'll save 35% on select PCs. See the website for more complete details. So you've also done a lot of cookbooks. I'm a huge fan. My sister and I always share recipes back and forth. That's carrot nice. Ginger dressing. That, where did you get the carrot ginger dressing?
So I made it up.
You did?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I was approximating, you know, when I was a kid, my parents used to take my brother and I to this Japanese restaurant, which I can't remember the name of. We were really little, but out here on Wilshire before I moved to New York City, and they had like that kind of carrot ginger dressing, and so that was what I was trying to do. And
so how do you get the recipes? Where do they come from? Do you just kind of you just open your fridge, take whatever's in there, put it in a blender and say, oh, that tastes good?
Sometimes it's funny, like my first book was all the food that I kind of grew up cooking and eating and making for my friends. So it was not like detoxy food or super clean or anything like that. It was like, you know, like grilled tuna with great Asian dressing and a hot dog bun and like that kind of...
That sounds good, actually.
Yeah, really good. And my dad's pancakes and just like yummy, delicious food. And so that really came from me going backwards and also in the present. Like, what do I make? What do I want? Especially when I was living in London, I cooked every night. And then when I did It's All Good, that came out, that was born out of my son went through a really bad eczema period.
I had that as a kid.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you grow out of it?
Fun. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, same.
Not fun.
And it was horrible. And, the doctor said to me, you need to cut out gluten, dairy, and sugar. And I was like, this is a 4-year-old boy. Like, what the fuck am I supposed to make for him? And then I was also at that point, you know, very interested in this idea of like, you know, I had done a cleanse and I was like, why do I feel so good? You know, like, what is this? Is there anything to this? And a lot of the kind of cleaner food was really boring. It was like steamed brown rice. And I was like, there has to be like a better way to do this. And so I wrote It's All Good. And that was sort
and that
of
was
like
the that was what was behind it when you
right,
decided to do
that
it.
Was
okay.
Behind it. Like I had these parameters, and I was like, "How do you make foodie, delicious food with nothing good in it? Like you can't fry anything. You can't. I mean, you know, not nothing good. But you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, nothing. Nothing that you shouldn't have.
Thank you.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
So I work well with parameters as well. Like I like that constraint.
And
I like it here. I like it there.
And so are you still doing cookbooks or are you?
Yeah, we have one. I think it's coming out in, God, when is it coming out? We're doing like sort of a big book of detox, like friendly recipes, really delicious and healthy. But I don't know what it's going to be called yet. Any ideas?
I'll think about it.
Thank you.
They should have the word salt in it, I think.
You think?
Yeah. Malden Salt Guide to Gwyneth Paltrow's Detox.
I better buy some stock in the company before I do that.
I know. I just got distracted thinking about all the food that you were just talking about.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, how do you keep all the questions in your head?
I just come in and
oh,
just,
I see.
I'm just making it all up as I go.
Freewheeling.
Yeah, we're just going here. So you have done 40 something movies, 20, let's just throw out some numbers here. I'm just going to make them up. 10 musical, what were they called, CDs, albums, songs, I don't know, things. Okay. You run a big business now. You've done all these cookbooks. You do all this volunteer stuff. Like, what is there a next for you? Like, I mean, I have a hard time just writing a column every week, and I feel really bad saying these things out loud. Like, what's the next thing that you're aiming for, or is it?
That's it.
There's no like.
That's it. I'm done.
You're done. So after Goop goes public,
I'm retiring.
You're
retiring. No one is ever going to hear from me again.
No, is there like a 5-year plan with all this, or a 10-year plan, or a...
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on if there's an exit and what it is, and
what do you think it is? Would you like Goop to be a GOOP on the stock exchange, or
I don't know. My son would like it to be. He's been learning about the stock market.
Oh, nice. Is he using Bitcoin? And
he's not using Bitcoin, but he wants to open a Charles Schwab stock account.
And his first stock maybe will be Goop. Who knows?
Well, no, because he wants to do it right now.
Oh, got it. No, but is that something that you're thinking about? Like, what the end goal of all this is, or?
I mean, I would be lying if I were to say I never think about an exit. But having said that, I feel like there are a lot of years left, and I mean, there's a lot of work to do to get the brand where I want it to get to. And you know, of course, one day, like all good Americans, I would like to retire, have a quiet life. Mm. But I think about it.
So when you are, when we're talking earlier about your daily schedule and things like that, you're talking about these issues that are important to you and retiring and so on and so forth. And
you're moving retiring up to the top of
to the
list.
Top of the list. How do you feel about like the current political climate? Do you try to pay attention to it, or do you try to keep away from it? Like, how do you feel
about it? I've tried all those strategies and more.
And
I'm pretty demoralized.
I'm Betsy DeVos must drive you up the wall. You can't say that.
I would say that I fundamentally am not aligned with a lot of the ideas that seem to be pervasive ideas in government right now.
And do you want to do things to push an agenda in a certain way, or is it like just like, okay, I can't
I don't
go
know
near
how
that?
I do that. And I don't know. I think that there are, I would like to just, you know, I don't know. I feel completely overwhelmed by what's happening. And, I don't exactly know. I feel like a lot of people that I know are sort of like, what's the game plan? Like, what do we do? You know, how do we get this train back on the tracks? And how do we bring some more kindness and humanity and inclusion back to?
But the problem is that being on a certain coast or another coast, it's really difficult to do that, right? It's, you know.
Well, I think there's a bigger issue, which is sort of what I was alluding to before, which is there's this fundamental divide, and I'm really interested in finding out like what is precipitating that, like what's underneath all this, and how can we?
Well, part of it, I think, is a financial one. You know, you have it's now 6 billionaires that have as much wealth as the bottom 3.6 billion people on the planet, which is just astounding.
It's pretty crazy.
And we voted for someone who...
Is that true?
Yeah, that's the Oxfam's latest numbers. I mean, you know, someone like Bill Gates or Bezos or something like that, their net worth can change by $6 to $8 billion in a single day on a mark, you know, depending on what the market's rallying. And I think that that's part of it. But it's also that it's interesting that, you know, I bring up the media thing with you also earlier, and I find it so fascinating that half of the country just thinks that one form of media is completely made up and the other half of the country thinks another form is.
Right. So what's the solve, you know?
something that Goop sells, maybe, that we all ingest every morning and we feel better about ourselves.
I'll work on that.
I don't know. I don't know what the solve is. I think I personally think that something has to break. But I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, you are now, I forgot to put on your list of accomplishments, you're now doing a magazine with Condé Nast, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like who's the audience for that? Is it the people just on the left and west coast, or do you want to eventually be able to have someone in Ohio who's reading that and buying things from you and
yeah,
so on
and
so forth?
And we do. You know, I think we're looking for to engage the curious person, right? We are trying to serve content, product to anybody who is curious, essentially. And you'd be surprised. I mean, if you look at the data, there are a lot of people in the middle of the country who are reading our content. And
what are the more successful stories and things that people are interested in?
Our wellness content is always really popular. I think that, there's something fundamentally going on, which is that women especially really don't feel well. And
you mean physically don't feel
well?
They
just don't feel as well as they feel they should feel. You know, we're all, I think there are a lot of factors involved. I think, you know, we all have this, we've sort of burdened ourselves with this incredible idea of over-responsibility and that we have to be all of these things and we have to be them to all of these different people. And that, there's pressure on us to be the breadwinners and to be maternal and to be soft and to be, you know, all of these things at once. And if you couple that with, you know, a lot of us, I think, having grown up in a culture where, you know, there's definitely, as evidenced by what's happening now, like there's a real misogyny that's been in existence for many, many years. It's nothing new. And then you also add all the environmental toxins that we're dealing with. I think there's just this combination of things that's happening right now where women, they don't feel that they're at optimal health.
And do you think that, and so they're, as you just mentioned, there's this misogyny, but it feels like it's finally changing.
I think it's finally changing.
And
I
do you
really
just
do.
Think that this is the whole thing, whether it's from the health and wellness to the, you know, to these gross, despicable men that are being finally ousted as being gross, despicable men, all of it, that it's finally kind of a sea change that's happening?
I feel that way very much, and I hope that that's true. And that's why, you know, sometimes, when we get pushback, like, oh, you know, Goop shouldn't, you know, ask this question if there's a link between, you know, autoimmune and whatever. It's like, you may agree, you may not agree. There may be scientific data to prove it. There may be anecdotal. This is like for the purpose of a discussion. Do not tell us we're not allowed to ask questions because that's all we're doing. At Goop, we don't ever say you should do this or you shouldn't do this. We're saying, hey, you know, this worked for our friend. Is there any truth to this? Let's talk to this doctor. Let's talk to this person. You know, let's ask the questions. And I think as women, we want to be allowed to be empowered enough to ask the kind of questions that we want to ask.
I think it's kind of amazing that you have to say that we want to be allowed to ask those questions.
But you see it in the pushback.
No, it's
incredible.
It's insane. And it's hard to get your head around. And for you being in Hollywood and, you know, all of this, it must be even more intense.
Yeah. I mean, what's remarkable is to see the avalanche that was.
Have you been surprised by that avalanche?
I have been deeply surprised.
Did you think, oh, well, this may just be a blip and then it's over? I mean, it's.
I
touched every industry.
I know. There were a few weeks where right after the first stories came out and I just thought, holy shit, like there's really something happening. Like this is really important. This is really significant. And it's just been unbelievable to watch.
How much longer do you think it'll last before it's finally the dust settles? No prediction?
That's a really good question. I mean, every day there's more stuff.
Every hour. I mean, you'll check your phone after this and there'll be someone else that's been...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that there... I don't know. It feels like we have to get to some kind of...
No, but it feels incredible and important. And so many people I speak to, both women and men, like... or breathing a sigh of relief. It's like, oh, finally.
Yeah. And you know what the other really interesting thing too has been to see like good men kind of wake up and sort of take an inventory and say, oh my God, have I ever done anything inappropriate in the workplace? Like, and really kind of gone back through and been sort of shaken up. And you know, people saying like, my God, you know, this time I asked out a coworker, was it the wrong, you know what I mean? The reverberations have been pretty wide and deep.
All right. So last couple of questions
Okay. Before
we wrap up. So if you had to say, if you kind of look back at all the stuff you've done, what's the thing that you're most proud of?
My children.
Oh, that's a good answer.
By far.
That's a good answer. And do you? I mean, is that for you? This is how I feel, but I'm curious how you feel. Most of this other stuff is kind of just like fun and filler in many respects, and like just kind of the thing that that is fulfilling, but not the thing.
No, I mean, I think that I hope that I have, you know, in the various chapters of my life, contributed a verse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you start out, you have these ambitions of career and what you want to do and an impact you want to make or whatever the case may be, depending on who the person is. And for me anyway, when I had my children, I really felt that I understood mm-hmm. my place and I mm-hmm. understood why I had been born. And, you know, my friend Drew, she said the most beautiful thing one day. She was talking about her girls. She has two girls. And she said, you know, she was also talking about her life and everything she had been through and film and everything. And she said, you know, but my girls, like, I was born the day they were born. And it all makes me cry every time I even think it or say it, but I really feel the same way. I feel like I was born the day they were born, and I feel like they give context and meaning to what I'm trying to do, and they kind of ground everything that I'm trying to do. And, you know, I'm trying to build a company with a set of values that they'll be proud of. And, you know, my son said to me the other day, well, maybe I'll take it over. And I said, well, that would be great.
Does your daughter not want to take it over?
No, she wants to be on stage.
She does. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that?
What am I going to do?
Would you prefer if you could?
It's none of my business.
It's true. Sorry not to tell you, but yes.
It's true.
It's true. Like, yeah,
I have
hard.
Nothing
yeah.
to do with it.
All right. So last question, which I sometimes ask people. If you could go back 20 years and give younger Gwyneth Paltrow a piece of advice, what would it be?
Just one piece of advice?
You could do two. I'll let you do two. It's Ooh. Usually one.
Wow, that's
but...
so hard. 20 years. I guess...
It doesn't have to be 20. It could be 18.
I guess I would say... I would just tell her that when she turned 40, like, everything was going to feel okay, and she really wouldn't give a fuck, and just to like hang on and get to 40.
was the lead up to 40 really difficult?
I think I've had a very amazingly intense life. Like if you think about, you know, kind of, I don't know, just the pace and the public facing nature and deaths and, you know, divorce and like there's, you know, it's been intense, and it all kind of like reached this crescendo right before I turned 40. And honestly, when I turned 40, I was like, oh my gosh, there was just this incredible lifting that happened of, you know, fear of other people's perceptions of me and this idea that, you know, I felt like I want to be responsible for what I'm doing and my responsibilities. I don't want it to be from the outside and what's expected of me, who I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to say. And I just felt very free to kind of be embodied in myself. And
so that wasn't really my last question. No, it's just a continuation that, like, I went through a divorce and it was incredibly painful and difficult. And, you know, my mother passed away and that was incredibly painful and difficult, but I couldn't even imagine what it's like to do that in a public setting. Were there points that you were just like, oh my God, just fucking go away?
Of course. Yeah.
But you just,
what can I do? This is my life. This is my trajectory. This is like my soul curriculum. You know, I've been, I've been this person in the culture for a really long time. And so I've stopped saying.
And then when you turned 40, it was like, whatever.
I was like, you know what? It's going to be what it's going to be, but I'm not here to be burdened by whether I'm good or bad or right or wrong based on, you know, what a reporter or an ex-friend or whoever, you know. Yeah. I sort of felt very liberated. I think that's something that you just sort of get this software upgrade when you're 40 and you're just like,
look at you with the tech straight in there, the software upgrade.
No, but do you know what I mean? Didn't that happen to you?
It happened to me, yeah, I think actually around 40. I'm only 41, but I think like a couple of years ago, I definitely had a point where I just was like, all the things that you said, where I didn't care about the negative or the positive. And it was I had two kids, and that was, I think it physiologically changes you as a human being.
I agree.
Completely, like, your fundamental being changes.
Right.
And for me, that was the big thing. Well, thank you so much. Last question.
Okay.
What's your favorite recipe? Because my sister's going to kill me if I don't ask this question. Favorite one.
Of mine or what I've been cooking
lately? More of yours.
I would say that my favorite recipe is from my first book, and it's chicken and dumplings.
All right.
It's a one-pot dish.
I know it.
You know, yeah, it's so good.
It's great.
And one-pot cleanup.
There's nothing like a one-pot cleanup. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to my guest today, Gwyneth Paltrow. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of Inside the Hive with Nick Bilton. You can find these on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And when you get there, please leave a glowing, beautiful review. Thanks, of course, to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work. Thanks to my editors at Vanity Fair. And thanks, most of all, to my sponsor, HP. Please support them the same way you support this podcast. I will see you all next week.
America has a problem, one that is uniquely ours. On the new season of Long Shadow, I delve into the complicated history of firearms from the Second Amendment to the AR-15. I try to make sense of how we got here and how we might find a path forward. From Longlead, PRX, and Campside Media, in collaboration with The Trace, I'm Garrett Graff, and this is Long Shadow, In Guns We Trust. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.